relax a little bit, and I will invite two starter bells so that we can get a stop closer. So. So, dear friends, today is July 6th, 2010. This is our Tuesday, every Tuesday class. I just came back this morning, 7:30, 7 o'clock. Fly out, two-day retreats in Wichita, Kansas for family. Actually, it's family retreats. We have family, parents, teenagers, and children. So we have three programs together, and we have two monks and two nuns. One elder monk, he is responsible for sharing with the elder for the parents. I was responsible. Everywhere I go, I respond for teenager. Working with teenagers everywhere I go. And the other two nuns from Plum Village with the children. And last year we had it, but just only two monks and not enough, because the children was not have left alone, and I don't feel right. So this year I said I will still invite two more sister, so to take care of the children from 13 to 5, and everybody happy, and the children so happy. Mm-hmm. And I can see they like to play with me. They call me tickless monk. They come when I eat, it's just like they come around and tickle my neck, and they like to hang around and play with me, but unfortunately I couldn't have very much time for them. Just like, you know, like the Matreza Buddha. Yeah, Matreza Buddha, he have like six children, always hang around with him. The eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongues, the body, and the mice. That six children always bother him. the future Buddha. And they represent and every that six. And then there's a manifestation of our six eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, and represent six children. You know, our ears always bother us. If we listen to something that we like, something that we don't like, it's bother us. And our ears, another jaw. But when we see something we like and something that we don't like, and our tongue, something that we taste and we like and we don't like, it always bothers us. And this Buddha always carry a bag with full of candy, and children always hang around him to ask for candy and snacks and cookies. And whenever, you know, people ask him, what are you carrying in your bag, and he just drop his bag. He don't say anything. He just drop his bag. He said, "Let it go." That's the act. He don't answer, but he say, "Drop everything. Let it go." Mm. What do you carry? Because we are carry so many things in us, and so many heavy, and many attachment. So people say, ask him, "What are you carrying?" And he don't say, "Let go of everything."
I have a question. I have the Maitreya that I have, and I see them other places too.
Mm-hmm.
He's carrying a big piece of gold.
Yeah, gold bag. That's another
over his head.
Mm-hmm. That's another manifestation of him. But the most well-known manifestation of him is the one I have with six children around him. Just only five, but one is hidden. Is our my consciousness is
mm-hmm.
hidden. You cannot
okay.
see. And he's very big, have a big
mm-hmm.
belly, you know, embrace
mm-hmm.
everything, have big belly, and that means he's embrace everything. But at the same time, he carry big bags of heavy stuff, the necessary of things. But when we will ask him, "What are you carrying?" he just let it go. That's his answer. It's nice that normally we give that talk, kind of talk, in the new year.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah. So that's what I, and then every time I go to there, that retreats, the children just get around me and just play and tickle me everywhere. My feet, my neck, everywhere while eating and where. And it's fun, you know, it's hard to get children around you, you know, because
mm-hmm.
they feel your energy. They feel you loving them.
Mm-hmm.
They are not afraid to be around you. And children is, they are very sensitive. They are very sensitive. They know, they feel what you know inside, but maybe they don't express, but they know you. And it's just like animal too, like dogs or animals too. So if you have a light heart, you know, have a loving energy, because they feel your freshness, that's what they feel, the freshness when they approach you. Even fish, you know, one time I went to Cindy's house, Cindy's friend's house, and the fish never just accept his dad, her dad. But me, when I come, some fish, every fish come and bite my toe on my finger. Put my finger down, his goldfish. Every fish come, put my hand down, he just, and some of them, they never come to my father, her father, and, you know, and licking the finger. Yeah. But it's nice to have that feeling. Yeah, so, and I really enjoy the trip, and every time, with the youth, and many questions, many painful questions, many difficulty in the youth relationship with parents, with boyfriends, girlfriends, with school. They have all kind of difficulties, you know, misunderstandings, wrong perception in parents. Expectations and many things. Sometimes they don't know who to share with. Yeah, most of the time they are. And but if we're there and, you know, just be spiritual counseling, school counseling, career counseling, I do all kind of counseling, and family counseling, you know, relationship counseling. It's make me happy, you know, to share that with them. And unless you're in their feet, you go through, you went through. Many of them went through like youth crisis, you know, spiritual crisis and physical, you know, hormone crisis, you know, many things the youth go through. And sometimes they don't know who to share and who to come and talk to. And it's the matter of choice. you know, who they trust, so that they can share, and who they can get a hold of, you know. So you will have to love them very much. And I have many things to share today, but I don't know what to, where to start. So this book, I bought it and I read it on the airplane. They call Life 100 People Who Changed the World. And this is either good or bad, you know, like Bin Laden, Obama is also in here, Jesus, Buddha, and many Confucius, many great people, and even many great, great bad people, most people still in here, changed in a positive way and changed, like Bin Laden caused the world to change, but in a negative way, right? Mm-hmm. So change can be positive, can be negative, you know. You can change from good to better, and you can change from bad to good, right? And I read many different books, different people that contributes to the world in a good way and in a bad way, and affects people's life around the world. And I come to the Buddha, and I just each person one page. It's a brief history of what they have been contribute, and a brief autobiography of their life. But I just read a little bit what the Buddha contribute, and just a few sentences of his life. You already know, but you can read it for yourself. But this is the sentence I like to read it to you. They say, many of the Buddha's discoveries about the inner workings of the mind are being confirmed by neuroscientists. And mindfulness meditation is now used by hospitals, schools, prisons, athletic teams to alleviate stress, promote healing, and enhance performance, creativity. And what I want to say is the main work of the Buddha is the work of inner workings of the mind. And had been confirmed by many neuroscientists. Because in this world where a lot of people work with the physical, you know, physical, we've been discover many things about the physical, but the mind, the inner mind here, is what I want to say. Sometimes we are lacking of that aspects, the spiritual, even spiritual, but some other spiritual tradition, they don't very much. I don't know whether they emphasize a lot about inner working of the mind. They might, but in Buddhism, it's very a lot focus on the working of the mind. And this is very important work, but sometimes we are forget. We don't focus much. We mostly because it's hard. It's not easy. The mind is something that you cannot see, so it's really hard. But physical, that means you can grab, you can hold, you can dissect to see it. But the mind is hard to dissect the mind. But now, the more neuroscientists is discovered, is more is the approaching is the teaching of the Buddha. It's the best teachings for the mind. The best teachings for the mind. For myself, my understand up to this point, I come to realize the teaching of the Buddha is the best teachings for the mind. The best teachings to discover the mind. I think next year, Thay, in Pumplis, they will have 21 days, the Buddha's mind, 21 day retreats. So I might go to the retreat, teaching the Buddha's mind. Because Because I bring up this part here because there is a girl who, at the teenager, sees a doctor. She's, I think, her. She's about to do her rotation internship, and she come and ask me, say that when I go to intern and there's some people come and ask me, you know, because as a doctor they train a lot about the physical aspects, how to heal the physical but not to how to heal the mind. And the last moment of your life is that's the working of the mind. And they say that some of her patients come and say, can you come and pray with me? And she says she's confused because she never trained in that aspects. Can you give me some spiritual consultations? Some spiritual advice? And she said that I never trained that, so I don't know what to do. And she said, can you hold my, and one of her patients would say, can you hold my hand and pray with me? And the patient asked, do you believe in God? Mm-hmm. Asked her. And in Buddhism, we don't teach about God. we teach, and she says, she's confused. She say, mm-hmm. She say, I'm undecided. I don't know whether I should hold her hand or not. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether I believe in God or not. And she come and ask me that question and say, so what should I do in that situation? So what do you think?
Hold her hand.
What do you think? At that moment, that's the person who is about to release their last breath. So what do you, even that? So now is the question is I pose to you first. you've been practiced many years. Learning the teachings of the Buddha, and you've been practiced. So imagine that you were her. So what do you do? Mm. We have many situations, unexpected situations come to us in life. So we have to prepare. So when you do, what do you do if you was her? Because, Gretchen?
I think I would hold the person's hand and encourage them to believe what they believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What I believe isn't important to mm-hmm. them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I'd hold the person's hand because they're looking for physical contact with
mm-hmm.
the person.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe rather than say, well, I believe whatever, because their death, their dying, their process isn't about me, it's about them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I'd see if I could turn the question around and ask them, well, what do you believe?
Mm-hmm.
And try to get them to talk about themselves,
mm-hmm.
because it's not about me.
Mm-hmm. Cyan, I think you have anything you think you can share? If you are a lawyer, so.
I don't know if that helps, but I agree with both of them that it would be a lot better to just have them talk about themselves. And it would bring them peace, I think. Though talking about yourselves and sharing your own story would maybe help them understand life maybe a bit better.
Mm.
But your beliefs probably don't
mm-hmm.
matter.
Mm. You want to say something? No? Barbara, you want to say something? You want to share something?
I think when
the time comes that someone is facing a change from the physical to the spiritual, they're looking for confirmation from someone that it's going to be okay. And I think that would, to me, would be the important thing, would be to comfort them, to encourage them that what they believe in is going to be okay no matter what the belief is. Because when we pass from this life to the next, it's an adventure to go go wherever we're going. Whatever we believe comforts us. But we all have fears about whether or not what we believe is perhaps what's going to happen. Many people have that fear, I think. When you have security in what you believe, you have more comfort. You're not as likely to question.
Yeah.
But those who question and want some support have doubt. And I think the important thing is to encourage people to not doubt what's coming, but to embrace it.
Yeah. Thank you. Anyone else want to say something, contribute to that question, you know?
I went through hospice training back in April, and one of the things that they tell us is when someone asks questions like that, like, do you believe in God, or whatever, pay attention to what they're saying, because they're trying to sort out what's happening to them. And they don't necessarily want to hear what the person in the room is saying, has to say. They're talking and listening to themselves in the hopes that they can somehow come to terms with whatever it is they think. And so they're telling us, anything that a person that's actively dying says is very important and needs to be acknowledged and needs to be honored. You know, if somebody says, do you believe in God? You know, you're not going to say, well, who cares what I believe? I'm not the one that's dying. You are. You know, don't get into that kind of a conversation with them. Encourage them to talk about and listen to what they're saying, and don't dismiss it. It sometimes sounds like confusion, but it's really not, because they're seeing things and experiencing things that we have no idea what it is. So,
Lisa, you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to add that I would take the time to hold a hand and pray together. I mean, whether our beliefs are the same or not, I think to pray with someone is to just sort of, you know, share your thoughts and wishes and blessings or whatever. And I think that, and I guess we're in responding to the question. I like what you shared, Elaine, about the listening and seeing what they need, you know, and really, if we are listening deeply, we'll know hopefully what they need and not what we need to share about our stuff.
Someone else want to say something? Yeah, it's important, you know, in the practice. So that's why we practice listening. You know, if we're able to do that in our everyday life, you're able to listen the thing that unable to hear. It's hard to hear. I mean, you are preparing yourself. There's many things that it's hard to hear. It's the opposite to ear. It hurts your ear. So deep listening is very... deep listening here, what I mean is compassionate listening. Loving listening. You're listening not to judge someone, but you listen with love. Open your heart even your children, you know, your children, they are, they need someone to listen. Even listen to yourself. You know, sometimes you have to listen to yourself too. You know, like, for example, you have a hard day. And your cell is calling. And you got some painful emotional feeling. Then you have to listen to that. To listen to yourself. Emotional feeling, the feeling, inner feeling in you. So I call that compassionate listening. You deeply listen to the pain that deeply that been there for maybe the whole life. That moment is pop up. So I tell the girl, say, I will hold your hand. And my God is love. Unconditional love. And I know you need, and every me and you, we both need love. When they ask that question, they want love. Mm-hmm. Deep down. Because deep down, they want love. They need love. Because maybe in the whole life, they never deeply experienced love. Maybe surfacing love, official love. But deep down, there is a deep longing for love. And that's why you look for a partner. You look for a partner that means something that deep in your heart, deep in your heart. If deep down you don't have, if you fulfill deep down, you fully feel that love already, I don't think you need a partner. We are lacking, deeply we lack in love in us. So we try to look for someone, for something that can offer that love for us. But have we been fulfilled? No. Maybe you have a partner for 40 years, 50 years, 20 years. You still physically you fulfill, but deep down you're not. Deep down you're not. There is moment in your life you walk, you feel so lonely. Sometimes you hold your hand's partner's hand, you still feel that longing for something, for something. This, unless you deep, really you dwell really deep in meditation, you can feel this kind of love. That's why people marry for 40 years, 50 years, they still divorce. They don't fulfill that. And that's happened in the society. 50 or 60% has been divorced. Because you're looking for that, longing for that, to be fulfilled. But you've never been fulfilled. And in the moment of your dying, in the moment, the last few moments of your breath, in this life, you're asking someone there, can someone there be fulfilled, my longing?
Something like the Buddha said, everything guided by mind, and the moment right before we dying, that's a very important moment. What they call the gan tử nghiệp, yeah, if that moment, like what I learned from the Rabbi Vietnamese, so I don't know how to translate, like the right moment before you dying, mm-hmm. it can lead you go to another life.
Mm-hmm.
Like if be angry at that time, right, that moment can guide us to another life, like animal life or snake, become a snake or something. So at that moment, if I was her, I will hold her, that person's hand, and share with her. Like you said, it doesn't matter what we believe, but we have to share her belief and make her belief stronger. Only us, we don't have God, but everybody else, they believe God, and they believe after they die, they go to the heaven or the hell. Most people, they wish to go to heaven. Let the dying person believe they go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything guide by mind, so mm-hmm. make they think stronger, so we can help them make them happier, so we can make them, make their next life will be better.
Mm-hmm.
Because the movement, right, the movement before they die, really important. So don't make them mad, don't make them think anything else, it's
mm-hmm.
just make their mm-hmm. thinking stronger,
mm-hmm.
be happier. So.
Did we watch, was that explained in that movie that you had us watch on the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That they talked at the moment
yeah. changed,
what the person
yeah.
is thinking
mm-hmm.
determines what the next life
yes.
will be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good, bad,
yeah,
whatever.
The transcendent. So that's why at that moment we have a spiritual teacher come and comfort their mind, you know, read. So that they can realize the impermanence of the body and let the body go, not to attach to this body. Let all the attachment go. So that it can be experience the unconditional love. So that's why people turn to God. Why? You have to ask them why people turn to God. God is love. And everyone needs love. And everyone needs love. So if we defy, we understand God in that term, then we liberate ourselves. We liberate ourselves from, we open up our mind. You know, because you know all sentient beings need love. So you remove, you transcend the boundary between you and others, right? And you remove remove the label, God or Buddha or Allah. In Buddhist, we have the term gần tự nghiệp, the karma of the last moment that you die. It's very important. We are collective karma, and also tích lũy nghiệp, accumulate karma. That means you accumulate many, the whole life accumulates the karma, the actions that you have been done. But that moment is very important, the moment of dying. Yeah. Right into right here and now. That action is very important to transcend birth and death at the moment. So if you're lucky, you can have if the moment of your last moment of life, you have some spiritual teacher and who is have experience in the practice that can guide you, transcending you to the next moment. So what we practice, all practice, is to prepare for that moment, so you are very calm, clear, calm and clear, so that you're able to see the impermanent and let go of the impermanent. When you are calm and clear at that moment, you don't really much attached by the pain in your body, you know. At that moment, your body is very painful because everything, the five skandha in you is deteriorating, falling apart, and it's very painful at that moment. But if we're not able to control, manage our mind at that moment, our mind is very chaotic. Because imagine when you're in pain, your mind is very confusing, it's very chaotic. That's why we, all the meditators, all the yogis, that's why people, they practice ascetics, that they make their body so pain so that can, you see how when they practice ascetic, is to bury at that moment, so at the moment they die, they can, you know, they already experience that. You see how people practice, that's why many yogis practice ascetics, to experience the pain of the body. So when the moment of fly, at that moment they experience, they already experience that, they overcome that, easily to overcome, to embrace. So there is a reason why people practice ascetics. So if you experience in everyday life, you're able to transcend in the painful in every life. So when you encounter all situations, you'll be able to calm your mind, you'll be able to calm. You calm. Or you, because you already all experience that painful suffering emotion already. You go through that and you're able to manage it, able to manage it, manage that. Question.
So how does that fit in with the Buddhist teachings? I thought he rejected asceticism.
He rejected it because it's, even though it's not leading to liberation, you know? Because he said this body is as a draft, but you abuse it, then you cannot cross the boat. But you use this body to experience everything in life, right? Experience it. But don't attach to that. Even you have a great, great bliss, bliss in meditation, don't attach to that. Even though you have attached the bliss in your meditation, still attachment, you have to let it go. You can liberate, have to liberate that too. The joyful, the bliss, you have to let it go. The painful, you have to let it go. You have to go beyond, move beyond, transform yourself beyond that. So otherwise, that's why the Buddha, he practiced ascetics, he's the high, reached the peak point of ascetics. And he realized that it's not work for him. Not work, because he's abusing his body. And how can he can cross the shore, the ocean of suffering without this body? You destroy the bowl already, how can you go to the another shore, see? So you don't over-indulgence this body. But not over making his body suffering. He taking walk in the middle path. It's like that. So come back to the point, I just want to say, is unconditional love. With no attachment, with no expectations. Because you are a doctor, you want to serve life, right? Serve everybody. But if you were to expect something, you were to so that's why we meditate. Sometimes we meditate, we go through a process of pain somehow. Now your leg is numb, right? And sometimes people, your physical body is very painful too. But experience that. But let it go. You know, if you meditate to the point that your body is very, if you sit cross for many hours, cross leg for many hours, you can see, experience this numb, and the body is like dead. Turn to the tower, like dead. But once you let it go, it's become to its natural stage, and you feel the lightness of that, extreme lightness. So the working of the inner mind is very important. It's crucial part for our life. So if you abandon that, or you neglect that in your life, and at the last moment of your life, the more you get older, the more you become aging, you need the spiritual life. You slowly go back to the root, you see. In Vietnamese we call lá rồng về cội. That means when the tree, the leaves is falling down, it's go back to its root because it's decay. Let's go back to nourish the root. Lá rồng về cội. It's like that. Small, when as day pass by, we agents, we slowly return to our root. Turn to our root. Our root here is the spiritual root. The spiritual root. You return to your unconditional love. Your unconditional love is your root. That where you was originally born. But somehow the external environment put many layers of grasping, of attachments, many layers of many polluted layer cover that, and we identify ourselves with those. With what surface and covering. So the more you practice, the more you transcend all these layers, unnecessary layer, one layer by layers, so that you can return to your original source. And that is what true healing is. True healing is unconditional love. That's the true healing, the true medicines that can heal all illness. So for example, if you have cancer, you still need love. If you have headaches, you still need unconditional love. If you have tumors, you still need unconditional love. Right?
but really, only you can only get unconditional love from yourself.
From yourself?
Or the non-self.
Yeah, the non-self.
But you can't get it from somebody else.
Yes, you can.
You can?
Yes. Because if I have unconditional love, I can share it with you, right? And if you have unconditional love, you can share it with me, right? That's why the Buddha have unconditional love, he can share with everybody. But you never last, it's never run out. But if you have unconditional love, it's very, run out very fast. Run out very fast. So that's what the teaching of interdependence is, you see? I can share with you, you can share with me, unconditional love. You have something to say?
When you were just describing that, the
the picture that I had was, now I've never been pregnant, so I'm banking on you, those of you that have had kids, to tell me if I'm right or not. But the thought that went through my mind and the vision that I had was an infant, an unborn infant, has unconditional love. This mother knows nothing about what this baby's going to be like, doesn't know what it's going to look like or its personality or anything. But she loves it because it's part of her. And then at birth, there's a break there, and the infant keeps trying to get back to that feeling that it always had those first 9 months. Far-fetched? I don't know. I just got this sense.
It can be that way. I don't think it's always that way, but I think it can be.
Not necessarily, but maybe.
But then Paula said, and she's right too, you get unconditional love from your dog.
Oh, yeah.
So long as you feed them.
Yeah, animal. Even the animal, they have unconditional love too, you know, because why I'm saying that, because the Buddha said that all beings, not sentient beings, all beings have Buddha nature. And once you have Buddha nature, you have unconditional love. Even a small ant, you know? Because they haven't awake yet. Small ant can be one day be a human. And a small ant can one day be a dog. In the samsara realms. Samsara realm. Paula?
The reason I was thinking about my dog, or any dog really, is that they're really good teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you watch a dog, you know, even if you don't feed them, or you forget to feed them 3 hours later, they still love you. They don't get angry at you, or, you know, they don't hold grudges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get over it, they move on, and they're just, you know, they're in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And they are perfect teachers on how to let it all go and go on with that love.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Even you hit them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw one dog of my friends, and she angry with her husband, and she hit him, and her kids like real bad. But after about an hour, the dog get back to her and lick her and show some love with her. But if I was the dog, maybe not. That's bad, maybe.
Right.
See, that's true. That's a big lesson for me when I look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She get mad at her husband. But nothing around her, only the dog, and she kicked the dog. The dog hurt kind of. His legs so bad. But he's the lover. But maybe we cannot do that.
So nhận thức chấm cá. Now in Vietnamese we call nhận thức chấm cá, that means you you
nhận cá chấm thức.
Nhận cá chấm thức. You was you killed the fish. You know, in Vietnamese we have a saying that you killed the fish and the fish was trying to get away, and you was angry at the fish, but you cut on the cutting board.
Cutting board. Slammed on cutting.
Yeah. So was you? I think you was mad at someone, but you hit the dog, just like that. So once we draw in our conditional love, we okay.
Mm-hmm.
We okay. Totally okay. That's why many yogi, they along themselves in the forest, and many Zen teachers, they are alone in the forest for many years, but they perfectly physically and mentally well-being, you see. But we have one partner to the next, but we are not okay. Why? Because we don't have we don't haven't discovered, we haven't discovered that our true unconditional love yet. So we're not okay yet, even though we have a partner. Even though we have a partner. So the practice is we over to somewhere that we have to discover and draw in our unconditional love. And wherever you go, you'll be okay. Even if you go into hell, you're still okay. That's why Bodhisattva, they go to hell to rescue people. Kristikana is one of the Bodhisattva, they call the Earth Bodhisattva. He always go to hell. That's his vow. To help people. Because in hell, his realm is still heaven. Because he's mine. Mm. And this is true example. If you have a luxurious house, for example, and in a luxurious house, you and your partner are constantly fight, do you think it's hell or heaven? Right? You can go to Hawaii, paradise. Mm. And you think that many people say Hawaii is paradise, but you go to Hawaii. And you see, you go to directly experience some family, and they constantly fight with the children, argue with them, husband and wife fight. Even though they live in, call the place where paradise, but you think it's paradise? No, right? But if you live in Africa, for example, some third world country. But you have the practice. You have the clarity. You have the unconditional. You still be in paradise. The example is like Mother Teresa. Mm-hmm. In Calcutta, India, it's a place where many orphans, many homeless. But I think she's still in heaven, right? Because of her heart, unconditional love. So once you discover your unconditional love, wherever you go, you bring heaven into that place. You can sleep on the floor with nothing on, no blanket, but you still sleep well. But if you have a luxury house, you live in a luxury, sleep on a luxurious bed, but you twist and turn night after night, right? And then that is where hell is. So if you have that job in that space, in that unconditional love, wherever you go, you can help people. You can hold the hand of people. So I told that girl, you can hold the hand of your patients and tell her that I be with you in my unconditional love space, and you'll be there with me. And I believe that you in that space. So that is where you should go into the hospice. You can go into the prisons. With that mindset, and you can turn that place into heaven, because your presence there, you bring into the space of that energy in you. if you have that in you, you have the illness, it's okay, you know. Because we all possess some kind of illness in us. But we don't fight without illness. We embrace them with love. Right? And you, if you are able to, that you feel at ease with them. You think that the people who are sent, they don't feel pain? They do. The Buddha also have diarrhea, have all kind of stuff. But he at ease all the time. He's very, at the last moment of his life, he had a serious pain in stomach, pain. Physical pain, but he, on his way, he looks so ease, so peace. Remember the story that he eat the person offered him a poison mushroom?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He unintentionally, mm-hmm. And he eat that, and he got very ill. But he don't fight. His physical body is very painful. Very painful. But he not blame. If we was to that, then we blame that person. You offer me some poisonous food. You see that he said. He sent his love to them. We call Tunda. Tunda is one of in Vietnamese called Tunda is the person who offer the last meal of the Buddha. And the Buddha said that this person offered my last meal have the same merit as the person who offered me milk when I was pained out. The first meal before I began. The same merit. Because he dwells in the unconditional love here. The person he offers some things to wake him up, to give you good health. He still share the same love. But the person who offers something, the mushroom was poison. But that person will offer out love, not out intentionally poison the Buddha. You see? So you have to in that mindset, the mindset of the Buddha, and you can see that. And for us, if someone was offered something terrible and we eat and we got running stomach or something, you might not say it out loud, but inside you say, you no good. So we have to practice in a way that we have to be joyful in our conditioned love in every way where you go, and people will benefit from your presence in all situations. So we can discuss talk on love, unconditional love, endlessly. Yes, endlessly. Because unconditional love is endless love. Right? And you can talk, we can talk, share. But the important is to experience that, taste that texture for yourself. That's the important. Each step you make, taste that, experience that. In that space, each breath you make in that space of unconditional love. And that's how you really enjoy life. Not to have something delicious food in order to enjoy life, Just when you have that glimpse, life become bright. Maybe next time I will share with you some the four immeasurable love. It's really very yeah. So if you have an immeasurable experience in life, immeasurable the infinite love in this life, you can do many works that benefit sentient beings. You can be there in the moment of life and death, you know. You go to nursing home, you go to in hospital, especially in critical care, you can see life and death there. Experience life and death in front of you. And as a monk, I have experienced this many times. I just received a call before we start class. They asked me to come and pray for. I already visited that person last time I told you, but he's still in critical care. So the parent, the family asked me to come and do some chanting tonight. And then I say I have class until 9. So I said tomorrow, 8 o'clock. Yeah. So you have that life need you. Wherever you go, people really need that kind of heart, that kind of persons. Wherever you go, we need a lot of that. We need to need a lot of that kind of friends, that kind of people in this society. Society needs so much that everywhere you go, in nursing home, in hospital, in hospitals, in prison, that where you should go. Not in theater. Not in an entertainment place, but in some place where life is full of suffering. In the place where there's desperately need that kind of life. So we need to practice to make that available everywhere. You know? So that's why one time they said one Buddha is not enough. We need many Buddha. We need many hearts. It's there. It's the matter is to where, how can we excavate it? It's there, but it's in a latent form. Latent, right? It's latent?
Latent.
Latent form. So we need to excavate it. Bring it into life. And that's when we practice deeply, we will ground deeply to excavate that.
Mm-hmm. The story about the poisonous mushroom made me think about when we do something unintentionally. We try to be doing something good, but that because of our because of how we were raised or whatever, it could be racist or sexist, mm-hmm. or discriminatory, and I like the poisonous mushroom because that still may have a good intention, but it still makes the other person suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we help ourselves realize when we've given somebody a mushroom that's poisonous? And how do we help others when we, and maybe we don't, but how do we help others see that what maybe they offered was poisonous to somebody else,
mm-hmm.
even if they had a good intention without
mm-hmm.
knowing it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
But how to help them realize
mm-hmm.
the suffering it might have caused to someone else,
mm.
so they can change that.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's really a good question, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we have a good heart, good intentions, but because here is because of ignorance, not able to see. Because why are we racist? Why are you prejudiced? Because you not understand the nature of interdependence. You see, not understand that you and me somehow, if we if we take off the skin and we all have some kind of meat, blood. We just see so our see is so superficial, mm-hmm. so surface that we're not able to see it. Yeah. But when we have people to see it, then we make the connection. You see? See and make the connection. So it's here is we have to, as a loving person, we would offer some guideline, give some guidelines, so that person can practice, just like you hold that person's hand and give some tools for them. You cannot work for them, but you say, this is some guidelines, some tools, so you work.
But that only works if the other person is willing to hear what you're saying. If they don't want to hear it,
mm-hmm.
if they're not interested, then...
Yeah, so here is you do your best. So we always do our best, you know? And not everybody, you know, when you offer a good thing, you have a good, you might have a good heart, offer a good meal, and the hungry people, they say, I don't accept it. Mm-hmm. Yes, they are. You love some people, you want to offer them love, but they need love. But somehow they couldn't swallow it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like hungry ghosts, you offer them love, mm-hmm. but their throat is too small.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't swallow it. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And then we uncover that a lot in our life. You know? You think that I offer it to teaching, not able to receive. Right? Like Tai Chi Ching, some people go against him. Just like the Buddha, you know? But he do his best. And hopefully one day they reach the peak of their suffering and they realize what of the teaching of the Buddha, the teaching of Jesus is good. Then they open their heart, you know? So sometimes suffering in life is very important. In order you, for myself, you went through a lot of suffering. I went through a lot of many struggles, and that's how I learned to love life, appreciate life, and love life. In that moment, I realized that a lot of people were suffering like me. I put my shoes in their case, in their shoes. So that's why suffering is something important too. You know, don't ever underestimate suffering. And that's why there is the reason why the Buddha say the first noble truth is suffering is not noble truth. You see that the first teaching of the Buddha in the four noble truths, suffering. That's why he called suffering is noble. But if we know how to turn the suffering into unconditional love and flower, then that become noble. But if you don't know how to work it, how to transform it, and it's not noble at all. Yep. Because people, Buddha, he see through it. Omniscient, understand the essence of suffering. You know, without witness to foresight, the Buddha went out the force of the suffering, the oasis and the he might not realize, he might not go to become a Buddha, right? Because he witnessed that, the suffering of life. If you read the life of the Buddha, you see that he see the foresight. Because when he was in the palace, he never see this, you know, the illness, the sickness, the death. But when he encountered it, he shocked him. And that's why he quests for for unconditional love, for wisdom. So never neglect anything. Take it and work with it. In our life, if we know how, we have the guideline, we have some guideline, then we work with it. We don't run away from it. So every day you look into that a little bit, experiment, you know, reflect a little bit, give rise to some thoughts of love in every day when you get up. So that's I was intent to share with you the five mindfulness today, but maybe say next time. Because whenever I go to retreat, I have many things come to me. Because when I'm real, that's the reality. You encounter life, you encounter youth, and many insights generate. So every youth, after every youth retreat, I have so many things to say. because of the love that I love them, and I want to give them something to work with life. I see their suffering, I see their struggle, I see their challenge in front of them, I see the challenge for them. Inside of them, I see the suffering, the pain, the misunderstanding, the wrong perceptions. And that's give me so many tools. And many questions, I question, and love arise. You know, I don't see them as underestimate their capability. I see their capability to grow strong, to be a good human, to be benefit society. I see their capabilities, their potential for that. But I see they are confused. They stand in life with a thousand directions. Circling life is amazing. There's a thousand path journeys around this, and they don't know which to pick and which to choose. And they have to. When they have to go through all this here, but at least they have the tool to work with, you know, the tool to work with. They have to experience all of this here, but some of them they're able to transcend and walk, continue the path, but some of them will withdraw. So we need people to go around. To go around.
So, I have a question about, you know, how much is it your responsibility to help people? And I guess what I'm specifically thinking about is my family. And my sister-in-law is very bigoted and narrow-minded and just can't even talk to her. And now her son, who's 17, is starting to think like that. So, you know, I mean, when I was back home a couple weeks ago, I mean, we really had a bad fight. And I haven't spoken to her since, but, you know, she's just so closed about anything. And if you don't agree with her, her first reaction is to start screaming at you. So you can't even have a discussion with her because if she doesn't like what she's saying, she'll scream at you till you just stop talking because you just want to get away from her. And so how far do you go with trying to, you know, maybe help people or to, especially, you know, I'm more or less thinking about my 17-year-old nephew, who I hate the idea that he's going to go down this narrow, mean-spirited pathway.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think it's that really, you know, practical questions and practical concern the people around us, you know. And I think the best thing you can do is, you know, first thing is to help yourself first. To help yourself, and slowly we could do our best, you know, and at least you can do is, you know, to help him or her niece, right? Niece or nephew?
My nephew.
Nephew. You know, to expose to him in some good environment, you know. That I think you can do, you know. For example, you can if you afford, you know, to have him a ticket, you know. For example, that's an example, and this is my ticket for you, you know, and accompany him to a retreat somehow. That you can have, and that slowly open up, you know, and then he expose himself to this environment. You just give him a key, and then he invest, and if he see that's good, and say, just give him a taste, you know, and he see the way out, and he can, and once he see the way out, he can help himself, and he can help his mother, you know. For example, you might sacrifice for a ticket, you know, and say, that's the way you can love him, you know, and this is not my ticket after he graduated from high school, and this is the peak age where they discover the world, discover themselves. So to go to retreat, a youth retreat, for example, and there they met good friend. They taste a bit of love, a little bit of love, a little bit of peace, and that's tempting him to explore more. Explore more, you know. And then when he come, and when he come back to his family, to his mom, and his mom can see the change in him, you know. And where that is where you start. Where you start. That's my hint. You know, sometimes it's really hard to, you know, someone else from outside is easy to help our family, but we inside is really hard to help your family. We call Phật nhà không linh, I mean, the Buddha in your side, inside your house is not very effective. But the Buddha somewhere else, huh? You know. Just like you and your husband, you have a Buddha. The Buddha inside your house not very effective, but somewhere else come, it's very more effective. Mm. That's what we call Phật nhà không linh, you know. So there's the same thing. I have a monk from my village, and it's not very effective, but some other monks come, it's more effective. But now they learn to appreciate, you know, because, and the other monks, they don't have the skill to transmit the teaching, you know, the language, but I have the skill. So it's like that, you know. Phật nhà không linh, Phật chỗ khác linh hơn, you know, the other Buddha come more effective. So even though, you know, you have many good things, but you offer, it's not effective, but someone else come and offer, it's more effective. So you have to, that's why we have to use the skillful means, you know, to help, you know. That's why in Buddhism we call the skillful means very important, you know? We have the skillful means. It's not the ultimate. That helps to lead into the ultimate reality. Study is the skillful means to help us, leading us, give us the guidance to ultimate. So study or meditation is not the ultimate skillful means, but it's a skillful means to help us to reach the ultimate. So we will stop here today, and so this Saturday we'll have a day of mindfulness practice, and you can join us. So I don't know what I'm going to share for this Saturday. Any So if we're lucky, we have a good environment, you know, we have someone that good teachers to give us some guideline, some advice, and that guideline can help us to walk the journey of life. Oh, there's a small one.
Mm-hmm.
That's innocent. Mm-hmm. Innocent mouse.
Little tiny.
Okay, so we will stop here. So thank you for your listening. Yes, thank you for your engagements, engaged into the Dharma talk. Give me more encouragement. You give me encouragement, and I share you with encouragement. So we are helping each other. So I will invite three Salabia so we can stop here. So just sit and relax a little bit. Relax the body in your mind. Thank you. So please sign up for the next chanting, and so we will do a